to live righteously.
Hey, it's me, Richie T. It's episode number 141 of the Cultural Hall. In the second and third block, we talk about going back to school, things that can help your kids, things that can help you as you navigate going back to school, whether it be yourself being the one going back to school, or whether it be your kids, people that you know, anything like that. We have our buddy Kirk Voss, who is a therapist. He's in talking about all the different tricks and helps and things to keep in mind, everything like that. Cool episode. It's already helped me a lot, and it will help you, I know, with every fiber of my being. All right, so let's do the intro on this thing. First of all, if this is your first episode of the Cultural Hall, we do this a couple times a week. We have what we call Articles of News on Monday, which is news articles about the Mormon Church. Be the good, be the bad, be the whatever they are. They just have to be, and bear in mind, this is kind of loose. We have to just be able to tie it back to the Mormon Church. So there's that. And by the Mormon Church, I mean the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So that comes out typically on Mondays. And then every Friday, and I say typically every Friday, we have an interview like this, where we talk to someone who's doing something, or we pick a topic like back to school. We talk about it like that. You can find us on all sorts of social media. We're on the Twitter, Facebook, Google+. Find us on Pinterest. That's where most people have found us, actually. Now on Instagram, all at The Cultural Hall. So we've been asking people for LDS mission stories. And continue to send those, please. What we've said is kind of less than 1,500 words. But make sure you give us a good idea about what's going on. Give us kind of a base story where you're at and where you're at as far as time served on your mission and, you know, your feelings, that kind of stuff. So it's not just like, one time I was tracting and a guy came out from a field of corn and it was scary. I mean, that's good. That's a great story. But if you try storytelling a little bit more, it might help. So I want to share a story with you in the hope that you'll start to send more stories. Here we go. This one is from Brother Brian. Says, I was on splits with a brand new missionary in 2001. It was his very first day of tracting, and I liked him. I could tell that he was going to be a solid missionary, and he, like me, enjoyed a good laugh. We were knocking doors in a trailer park in Chandler, Indiana. Nobody was answering their doors. In the distance, we could hear heavy metal rattling the aluminum shell of a trailer on the other end of the park. We followed the noise, thinking that we could get some, or with this thinking that we could find somebody to talk to at the source of the music. We knocked on the door several times, louder each time, and eventually a man answered the door. He seemed to look past us as we yelled back and forth to each other over the sound of his stereo system, and he invited us in. He turned off the music and explained to Elder Taylor and I that he was blind and that he had a teenage son who lived with him, that he was single, and that he was very popular with the ladies in the trailer park. His story was made even more interesting / amusing by the way that he looked. He looked a lot like Cheech and Chong from Cheech and Chong. He even talked like him. He wore very short soccer shorts and a wife beater. Speaking of the neighbor ladies, he told us, "It's very exhausting to be so popular." Hopefully that's the right accent, Brian. Sorry. We asked if we could share a message with him, to which he agreed. He invited us into his kitchen. He motioned for us to sit at the kitchen table, and he boosted himself up onto his counter, facing us, his legs dangling from the counter, and his hands to the sides of his legs, stabilizing him on the counter. We had a prayer, and I began the discussion. He listened politely. It was only a couple of minutes into it when he shifted his weight around a little bit on the counter, and a man part, a ball-shaped one, popped out of the bottom of his blue shorts, Umbros. It's a good thing that he could not see me smiling from ear to ear as I continued to speak, but I suppose that he could hear it in my voice. However, this continued. Through the whole discussion, as he shifted a titch to the left or right every few minutes, let's just say that at one point we saw all three members. I asked Elder Taylor to share the first vision. I came to find out that Elder Taylor is one of those people who cannot not laugh, especially when it is entirely inappropriate to laugh. I consider it a tender mercy that he was able to keep his composure as he shared, "I saw a pillar of light whilst this kind brother's equipment rested comfortably on the yellow formica." I would imagine it would have had to have been very cold, but how could he not know? I've never had to work so hard to hold it all together, and I hope that we earn special blessings for doing so. To my knowledge, this man has not yet joined our church, but I've always been grateful for this very memorable discussion. So they obviously don't all have to be stories like that. In fact, it's going to be better that they're not all stories like that, but that is a great story. And so to Brother Brian, I appreciate you sending that in. You can send me stories, richie@theculturalhall.com. They can be like that. They can be funny. They can be very serious. They can be very spiritual, whatever it is. richie@theculturalhall.com, or you can send us to the Contact Us tab located at theculturalhall.com. Let's get to the second and third block. It's all about back to school.
Hi, this is Dan the Laptop Man from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City. I want to personally thank you for supporting our local Utah business for 21 years by offering an absolutely insane deal. A brand new desktop computer for just $799. That's right, $799. That gets you a computer hand-built right here in Utah with a lifetime parts and labor warranty. You simply can't find anything like this backed by an amazing lifetime warranty anywhere. It's downright impossible. It's a $2,000 desktop PC for $799 with a blazing fast processor. It's perfect for home, business, or back to school. It's lifetime parts and labor warranty, so everything is covered forever. Viruses, hard drives, RAM, everything. How much is it? $799. This computer is simply the greatest thing since sliced bread, and it's only $799. Come check us out at any one of our locations or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. At PC Laptops, we love you.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and returning to be with us, it's been, what, a year and a half? Almost 2 years?
Something like that.
Kirk Voss, he's a licensed, let me make sure I get this right. He's a licensed...
Marriage and family therapist.
Marriage and family therapist. I was just going to go licensed therapist.
That'll work.
Licensed marriage and family therapist, and we're talking all about back to school, which I feel like for a lot of people is a huge sort of life change. So... not specifically Mormon. These things aren't only for Mormon back to school, but you know, Mormons got a lot of kids going back to school. So hopefully some of this stuff that we talk about here in the second and third block will be something that you can appreciate, something you can institute in your home, and something that can help you ease the tension that is going back to school. I know in my house, it's one of those things where the kid now, he's a junior, going to be a junior in high school. And, hey, are you excited to go back to school? No. Why? School sucks. Why? I hate it. Why? You know, I don't want to go to bed early, which makes sense. I don't want to not be able to just hang out with my friends all the time. Well, that makes sense as well. So hopefully we can do stuff for kind of all age of kids and even, you know, for people themselves going back to school as well. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Let me ask you, Kirk, since you were last here, what's been going on for you?
So, obviously, I'm a therapist, so I see a lot of folks. We've been doing a lot of parenting classes. We do some relationship classes. We try and be a presence in the community as well as we can. There's plenty of need. It's just a matter of letting people know that we're there, and then we can be a resource to them.
How can you be a resource? Tell people how they can get in touch with you if they live here in Utah.
So our website is ambercreekcounseling.com. Mm-hmm. And there's information there about classes we do, about presentations we can do. We'll go on site to people's workplaces or their church events or whatnot because we want to be involved. We want to be accessible to people. We don't want to be the standoff crowd of people who have answers, but you have to say the right words and the magic password to get it. You know, so.
Swordfish. Yay, I got in.
Right. Right. We want to be accessible to people, and we want to be helpful, and especially this time of year, you know, school kicks back on, and seasons start to change. People's stress starts to ramp up. The holidays approach. It's normal for people at this time of year to start taking more of an account of where they're at. And it's funny, summertime typically our business gets lighter because people, you know, weather's good, sun's out, school's off, no one has to worry about their kids' grades. They just kind of sit back and kind of take a breather for a few minutes, or they're on vacations and busy with that.
Yeah.
But then fall kicks in, and it's time to suddenly buckle down, and they're worried about the kids being on track and doing the right thing. And then, you know, the holidays approach, and, you know, as adults, you start paying a lot of attention to those big expenditure months, you know, mm-hmm. months in advance. And, you know, weather changes and people start feeling the pinch, and they start feeling down and sad. So times like the fall are when people need to know where the help is and where they can get some ideas for balance and, you know, making their life feel right.
Have you noticed a difference? Elder Holland, I don't think it was this last general conference, but the general conference before, it may have been this last one, but I'm pretty sure it was fall last year, talks about mental health and mental health issues.
Excellent talk. Like a broken vessel.
Have you noticed an increase of people that were maybe hesitant before coming in and saying, yeah, that, you know, I was prompted, or is there any sort of noticeable increase?
You know, the sad part is it's hard to track that because people don't come in and say, hey, I heard that talk in conference. And so I guess here I am. But what I would say is that in the conversations with people that are already through the door, a lot of times we can kind of help people to remove the pathology of, you know, this terrible stigma that I have. And, you know, as I think Elder Holland was saying, is that people go through these experiences, depression, anxiety, chemical and biological experiences that we can't just buck up and do better with and just decide it's over. Mm-hmm. We have to get treatment. We have to get help. And that's just part of the deal. And so when people hear that and they know that an authority that they respect feels the same, that's genuinely an okay thing to grasp onto, that I'm struggling with something and that's legitimate and I'm not weird. Mm-hmm. When they know that, that helps them a lot. And I dare say it's kind of twofold, because the person that's struggling with something feels empowered to know I can get help. I'm not weird for getting help. Sure. I'm normal. But it also gives family members of that individual kind of some new perspective, so they can stop expecting outlandish and unfair things, and they can start to collaborate with them on the healing. You're struggling with something. Let's work on that together. That's not something you made up. That's a real thing. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated the talk for that purpose. Like a Broken Vessel was a good one.
Let me ask you this, too. For someone like yourself, where you're a licensed therapist, are there ever times where you're like, man, I just need to talk to someone? Or is that sort of a weird stigma?
Oh, no.
Among therapists, where it's like, no, I know what the steps are. I just need to do them. You know what I'm saying? Almost like that, like how doctors kind of feel a little bit above, where it's like, oh, well, no, I know what I need to be doing.
Right. Well, actually, in truth, statistically, the three groups of people that need the most help and get the least are doctors, police officers, and therapists.
Really?
Yeah, because they feel like they know the answers. They've already gone over it before. They tell people these answers hundreds and thousands of times a day. Why would they possibly need to have that help? And I think in some ways it kind of feels like it undermines their position in their minds subconsciously. They feel like, well, I'm getting help for this. I guess that means I'm not as good at my job as I thought, which is crap. It's totally illogical, right?
To put it blunt.
It just is, because the truth is that there isn't a soul on earth that wouldn't need help trying to rebalance, refocus, and stabilize themselves. That's just normal. That's human. And I dare say that knowing all the right answers doesn't enable you to practice all the right answers. Mm. We can develop amazing, just beautiful, powerful telescopes to look across the stars and to see in detail things that are out there. But try and turn that telescope back on yourself and have it be useful as you point the lens at you. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like that developed muscle we get of being able to help people see through the dark and understand their problems. Doesn't necessarily mean that we know how to do it for ourselves. We need someone else to kind of guide us through. Hmm. So, yeah, I do. I have in the past benefited from counseling. That's helped me, and I would recommend it to anybody.
Cool. All right, let's get into it. Back to school. So I asked you, as we started to talk again about having you come back to the Cultural Hall, to give maybe some tips or advice, or let's just ease this going back to school time for people. So that's what we kind of preface this whole thing about. We haven't talked much about how you want to go about it, so let's walk through it.
So to me, there's three categories. There's good things that we should keep in mind as we get our kids back in.
All right. Good things.
Good things.
Got it.
Another one is concerns we need to keep our eye out for.
Okay. Concerns. Sorry, I'm just marking them out.
That's
you know how people like to do that. I'm going to talk to you about the following things.
That's and right. Then
all right. So good keep things, concerns.
And then the third thing would be hard things we may have to address that may come across our path.
Hard things.
Yeah.
Okay.
And not the hard things won't necessarily be something all of us will grasp onto, but it's something we should be aware of so that we can at least address them should they come. But, you know, I mean, let's start with the good. I think it's perfectly reasonable there. Okay. There's a lot of good things we should do to kind of help our kids get back into the swing of things. Back to school time can be stressful. You're going out buying clothes. You're getting everything set up with schedules and routines and everything else. It's a lot of hard work for parents, mm-hmm. you know, whether that's on a physical level, getting things set up, or in addition to that, it can be also the the stress of trying to release your kids back into the school system and believe that they're going to be okay, that's hard.
Sure.
We care about our kids. We want them to do well. You know, coming from a place of having been pushed around and bullied myself as a kid, I remember that experience of going to school and wondering, you know, when can this day be done already? And I was a kid. You know, I can only imagine my parents in the glimpses that they had of where I was struggling and how that was hard for me, how heart-wrenching that must be to have your kid go out. Well, now I'm a father and I have that same experience. I get to enjoy that joy. But anyway, I think there's several things. First of all, setting up a routine is a good thing. You know, don't fear structure. I think a lot of times we feel like, well, I'm going to be that fun parent. I'm going to be the good parent.
I don't need rules or structure. Right. They're going to learn by experience.
And they'll know that I love them so much that they'll just choose what's good for them.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't work.
Yeah.
Kids actually thrive on structure. They verbally hate it, and they'll tell you all day long they hate it, but they actually thrive on it.
Hmm.
And that shows up statistically throughout their growing up years. It's most especially visible in the teen years, but it's true even as a little kid. So don't be afraid to structure. Set up the routines. Have bedtimes. Have regular limits and things. This is something I probably talk about later on, but I just throw it out now, is that parents have the domain over all electronics in the home. You know, in this day, we have more electronics than anyone ever dreamed we would. Mm-hmm. Phones, tablets, cell phones, computers.
I thought it was funny. I recently went to Jackson Hole and had to pack up chargers and stuff for everything that we took with us. And we were there to run a relay, but then we were going to stay a couple of days. I think that between the devices for myself and that my wife had, and we have different types of phones. I have an Android and she has an iPhone. But that just sets it up. I think there were 7 different chargers that went in the bag with us.
Wow.
And I just looked at it and I was like, where has this life gotten that there's 7 chargers to go somewhere?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we're so dependent on it. It's where we hover because it's what we have. And it's what the world around us expects us to be fluent with. So the electronics aren't the problem. I just mean to say that as the electronics are taking a part in our lives, as parents, we need to be sure that we are accepting the role as being the leader in the home for electronics use. And some people say, oh, well, my child bought that with their own money, so it's theirs. Nope. That's not the way it works. Everything under your roof falls under your jurisdiction, regardless of where it came from, when grandma gave it to them, what money they saved up on their summer, you know, job or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's under your domain. And as such, you as the parent are responsible for the consequences of the misuse of those items. You're certainly also responsible for the correct and proper use of those items. So
are there recommendations, as I hear you saying this, are there recommendations of practices for this? Like, you know, you always hear like TV watching should be limited to an hour, or, you know, are there things like that, like phones, like suggested things that you would say, you know, I know I hear from a lot of people, phones are in mom and dad's room at night. When you go to bed, phone is there. Are there other things like that you would say are good practices?
Yeah, and I want to preface this next part is with the statement that really there's a variety of ways to do this. There's no one way to skin this cat. So if you feel comfortable about doing one or two or three of these, that's great. The purpose is making sure that you have a voice and you're taking your role as a parent.
Mm-hmm. But I can't tell my kid. Yes, you can.
Exactly right. It's a mistake to assume that our kids are going to be damaged by our stepping up and being a parent, or that their relationship with us will be damaged, or that we're going to somehow lose their love. That's just not true. Statistically, that is not true. Their outbursts, their pushing back, their anger at us, all of it fades away to nothingness later when they realize that the structure saved them.
And to that, though, sometimes it feels like you're just kind of being a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the kid wants you to feel that way.
Yeah.
And as the parent, you want them to have the freedom. So stepping in and giving them more restrictions, I think intrinsically makes us feel like, oh, I'm being that helicopter parent. I'm doing the wrong thing here.
Mm-hmm.
The really good thing to do, personally, I would suggest, and I'm going to give you a few ideas here, but when you set up the structure and the style for which you're going to set up your household, do it when you're calm. Do it when you're clear-headed, preferably with a partner or a good friend at your side. So that you can bounce ideas around, you can do it from a clear, steady, stable place. And then when you've got those ideas in place, put them down on paper. Don't have them floating around in the wind. Mm-hmm. Like, I think this is what I'll do. Put it down on paper, have it solid. You know, this day and age for him. It's like, look, I'm old school. Yeah. Put it on your tablet. Yeah. Whatever you're going to do.
What's that? That's paper,
that's
son.
Paper. But make sure it's written down so that in the heat of the moment when you're upset or when the child is upset or when the circumstance gets ugly, you can turn back and say, you know what? When I was clear-headed, this is what I felt good about. Mm-hmm. I'm doing that. I'm sticking with that. That's a safety guard. Anyway, so there's different things you could do, right? Having the phones all be in a basket in mom and dad's room by 9 or 10 o'clock. I don't think that's outlandish. I personally think that's perfectly reasonable. I grew up in a day when there weren't phones. Mm-hmm. And while today phones are used for safety and for social connections, there's no social connections that are inherently needed after 10 p.m.
Sure.
I don't know of any, especially not during school.
Yeah.
So a lot of cyberbullying happens late at night. A lot of dabbling into things that kids don't need happens at night. There's a lot of distractions and sleep disturbances, avoidance of sleep that happens at night. So having something like that is perfectly reasonable. Setting up filters in your home is totally reasonable.
You mean like internet filters?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
And they have ways of disabling internet just unilaterally across the board for the whole family. The Wi-Fi can shut off on a timer.
Mm-hmm.
You can do things where you can set up time frames where the kids can use the television or the laptop or the tablet for 1 hour a day or two. I mean, different approaches. I've seen some parents do this and it works quite well for them where they will say, all of your usage is perfectly available to you provided that you finish X, Y, and Z.
Mm.
And they have just a list of things that need to get done every day, some chores and some homework checks and, you know, this and that or whatever. And then it's free reign. You know, different parents will try that as well. I don't think that there's necessarily one perfect way. What will stand out to me, though, as a therapist, is when people come in and they say, I don't know what to do or I feel like that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Those two stances, I think, are a mistake.
Hmm.
So setting up routine is a good thing. Communication's another. I think it's really important that we kind of open that line. Kids inherently don't necessarily want to come up and tell you their deepest fears and hopes and dreams. That's not kind of their thing, at least not past the age of about 7.
Sure.
But what can happen is, I heard this expression from my mother once, and I actually really like it. She said, if you listen to idle chatter, then the kids will come to you with things that matter. And I agree with that. I think we need to invest interest in whatever our kids find interesting, whether that means that for the afternoon we suddenly take an interest in their TV show or in their online game that they think is kind of cool,
mm-hmm.
or if we take interest in a hobby that they have or something that's kind of, you know, some conversation that they've picked up that for us is just mind-numbingly stupid.
Yeah.
And we're like,
this
oh my gosh,
awful.
It pays off in dividends later because when the kid realizes, oh yeah, my parent was actually invested in that. They didn't look down on that. They didn't laugh at me. They didn't try to change the subject. They mm-hmm. didn't brush me off like I was irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
They cared about that. That must mean they're a safe harbor. And then later when things actually matter, like I got bullied at school or I was offered something at school or I decided to engage in something and I need to kind of fess up. Well, those kinds of circumstances, if they realize mom or dad is a safe harbor, it becomes kind of a no-brainer. Of course I can go there.
Hmm.
And of course your response as a parent, if they ever disclose those things, needs to be tailored. You need to remove.
What? How could you? Probably not the way to go about it.
No. For some reason, kids don't respond well to that. I can't imagine why.
No, I don't get it.
No, it's a mystery. So.
Yeah.
Intense hurt, anger, and fear in tone or inflection or volume is a mistake.
Mm.
Those kinds of feelings, should you have them in response to what your kids are experiencing or doing or saying, should be expressed back from the parent's role in words, not in tone or volume.
Hmm.
That's the way to convey it. And then you're always a safe harbor.
I'm really upset with you. I want you to know really, really, really upset with you.
Well,
it seems hard to do though sometimes, and that's certainly just human nature. When you
absolutely.
Get really upset and it's like, what a bonehead thing you want to say at the loudest voice possible. What a bonehead thing for you to do. But I feel like the times where I've had to react, and I think that's the hardest thing, is because sometimes you don't know that you're going to have to react because something will happen, and then it's like, okay, I'm reacting now.
Mm-hmm.
To make that choice of not screaming or yelling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a practice thing. It really is. No parent is going to be good at this from the start, and mm-hmm. and probably not for the first year or two or three. That's normal for that to become a muscle we flex and get good at. But remember that You know, this isn't about I did it right or I did it wrong, and so it's terrible, I lost. Mm-hmm. If we make a mistake, if something goes poorly, we respond poorly, it's perfectly reasonable that as quickly as we note it, you know, within 5-10 seconds, if we can, catch ourselves, take a back step, acknowledge, okay, wait, I want to tell you something. It's important that we discuss this, and then change your track. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You know, parents, a lot of times they figure, well, it's a slippery slope. I'm already down this path. I'm already furious. You know, the blood vessels are flying out of my face and I'm just furious. We're not going back now. And yeah. That's just not true.
I'm all in.
We don't have to be. We can catch ourselves along the way, and we can get good at practicing parenting that instills confidence in the kid. And really, what we want to end up doing, I won't dwell too much on this, but what we want to do is we want the kid to see us as the messenger of the consequence, not the dictator. You know, we establish in advance what the consequences will be. We express to them, you know, if things happen, if these rules that we've all discussed are broken or crossed, well, I just want you to know there's going to be consequences. And here's a few examples, maybe post them on the fridge. It's going to be there. And then in the heat of the moment, you can just say, level-headed, hopefully, as best you can. I know that's not always easy.
Sure.
As best you can, you say, you know what? A plus B equals C. It always does. You did this. That brings that consequence. Unfortunately, that's going to be this consequence. And then that removes the burden from you of having to like instill in them what a big deal it is, because it's not your job to be the megaphone anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You're just the delivery person.
Sure.
Hey, by the way, just so you know, this is the consequence that comes from that. I want you to know that in advance. And then the kid starts to see you as, well, unfortunately, dad's going to give me that consequence. I hate that, but I can at least talk to him.
Yeah.
And that's a powerful place to be. You want that. You're going to have consequences all their lives. But if they know they can get consequences from you, but they can still tell you stuff, then later on, if they steal the car, they do something bad, you know, something big happens, consequences are coming. I know that. It's a given. But I got someone I can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Huge power play for the parent.
You know, another thing that, as you were talking, that comes to my mind is it seems like sometimes as parents, once we go down the slippery slope, as you were, as you said, that we feel like we can't apologize because we lose some sort of power in apology. And I just remember, you know, one time getting into it with my dad, who very rarely, but I remember one time he just lost his cool like you wouldn't believe. And I remember right after, the power that came with where he came to me and said, you know what, listen, I was upset. This is why this upset me. I'm sorry. I hope that you'll forgive me. He didn't say, and now you don't have the consequence of what was coming, but he did say, you know what, the way that I handled that was not the way that I should have handled that as a parent. So I hope that you'll forgive me for the way that I handled that. Right. And that to me, you know, as I share that with you, I can see it in my mind where we were. I can remember how I felt knowing, hey, my dad's not perfect, and kind of having that empathy with him, but also seeing his vulnerability and recognizing it now as a parent, going, you know what, parents aren't perfect.
Right.
We don't know.
Right.
Oh, that was dumb. I really messed up. That was a choice I wish I wouldn't have made.
Yeah.
And I think if we kind of share that journey with kids, instead of being, we're always right, you're always wrong,
right,
kind of way, I feel like it develops a real relationship as opposed to something that's set up in kind of a phoniness.
Absolutely. And plus you're modeling too. I mean, you're modeling for the kid how they can redirect their course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they go off the handle at a teacher or at a peer, they need to know that it's okay to take a back step and acknowledge fault and to correct their course. And if you do it for them, you know, in front of them, they're going to learn from that. That's huge. That's a big deal. So I totally agree with that. The line in the sand and the consequences and the limits, those shouldn't bend. But we can embrace our humanity.
Yeah.
That's okay.
And have to, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are we still doing good things?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I can fly through these if you want to like.
Oh, no, no. I love it. I just want to make sure I know where I'm at.
Yeah.
I'm loving the good things.
So there's, you know, setting up traditions is also a big deal. Traditions and rituals. I think I may have mentioned last time I was here, I don't recall, but one of the things that establishes the best patterns of growth and change in children is having expected patterns of tradition. Whatever is ritualistic in their mind actually leaves more impact on them in the long term than does any rule or lecture you can give them. For example, every Sunday afternoon we go out and we help Aunt Peggy with, you know, putting away her stuff and helping her out in your yard, whatever. The kid will learn.
Poor Aunt Peggy.
Poor Aunt Peggy. But what will happen is over time, week after week, year after year, the kids will remember, you know what, people matter more than things, and service isn't a weird thing. Service is actually a positive thing. And that sticks to them just years beyond anything you could, you know, yank them down, belt them into a chair and say, look, you need to help people. Service is really important. You need to care about people. You're so selfish. Look at how vain you are. And that's not going to stick.
Yeah.
It's just not. But giving them ritual that they can attach meaning to, that is power. So whatever your rituals or traditions are now, ramp them up. You know, whether that's Friday night pizza, Saturday morning pancakes, we always go to Johnny's game on Saturday morning. We always go to, you know, Melissa's ballet thing on Thursday. Take the family, get them going into tradition, rituals, expected practice, things that they can look forward to. They may hate it. They may grumble. They may roll their eyes. Doesn't matter. Do it anyway.
That's interesting because as you say that, I'm thinking about, especially with back to school, we always would go out to dinner the first day of school that night. Everybody would go out to dinner, big family, so it was pretty expensive, and we'd always go to a relatively pretty nice place, and it would always be sitting around the table going, all right, Kirk, what did you, how was your first day of school? Oh, it's great, I'm in this class, and I got a brand new box of crayons, and whatever, right? And then everyone in the family got that thing to do, and I remember, because it didn't always exist that way, it was only that way, my parents got divorced, it continued for a year or two afterwards, and then it stopped, and I remember going, man, I really liked looking forward to sharing how my first day of school went. Yeah. And so that tradition was able to exist where, you know, when mom would get home from work or whatever, I'd be able to be like, hey, you know what? I still want to share this with you. We can't do it the way that we could before. But having that tradition. And then on a spiritual side, you know, my dad would always, and I know a lot of people do this as I share it. My dad would give us all blessings before our first day of school. Maybe it would be that morning or the night before or the Sunday before, whatever it was. But just a blessing of kind of comfort as the year came on. And that was something that continued for me even into college where I was like, listen, I know I don't even live with you anymore, but I really like this. This is important to me. And I feel like it makes a significant difference in how the year goes.
Yeah. No, I love that. I totally agree with you. And remember that there's power in predictability. Our kids, all of us as humans, we always say, oh, I love spontaneous surprises. And well, that's nice. I believe, personal bias here, that 90% of us wants predictability, and we're happily surprised with 10%, you know, newness and spontaneity, and this is great. Mm-hmm. But 90% of us wants to have things as expected, you know, good things we can count on. We know that when we wake up in the morning, our lives will be this way. When I get home from work, life will be generally this way. I've got something that I can expect, count on, look forward to. And we glean psychological strength and resiliency from that. And when that's stripped away from us because things are always on the rocks or always up in the air and I don't know what's going to happen next, we suffer psychologically. And that's measured. So anyway, just something to think about. Plant in tradition and ritual as a good thing because it helps your kids bounce back better from crisis and trial. It helps them feel safer in the home, and it helps them form identity.
More good things.
Absolutely. So also, my mother always told me, never let school get in the way of your education.
And, okay.
I have to say that very carefully. My wife's listening to this, I'm sure. She's an educator, and she's a trained educator, and she's really good at it. Mm-hmm. And she always was frustrated when parents would rip their kids out of school for, you know, a big vacation in the middle of the school year, and this or that was going on. And she has a point. She's right. We need to support the structure and the process. I totally agree with that. However, I think it's important.
But, sweetheart.
But I think as parents, we need to step up and remember that our role as parent is the most important voice in our child's development. We can't pass that off. We can't think, well, my kid's in school from 8 to 3, so I'm off the hook. I'm good to go. And maybe at 3 o'clock they've got, you know, soccer or whatever else, and I'll be a parent, you know, between 6 and 9. That's just not the way it works, at least not healthy, successful, long-term parenting. The way that that ends up working out for us is that we take the primary parenting role. We educate, and school supplements our goal. That's what we're supposed to be doing with our church services, with our family meetings, with our extended family gatherings, with the goals and the sports and everything else we set up, and then school as well. All of it is supposed to supplement and accentuate the prime driving goal that we have, which is to raise healthy, happy, loved individuals. And that's what we will be doing if we keep that focus. And if that means, heaven forbid, that we have to push back a little bit on extended family events or on a church event or even on a school event so that we can preserve our child's strength and happiness, That's what we should do. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's healthy, advanced, progressive parenting, in my view.
That's a good thing.
And then ramping up success. You know, a lot of people will say, how do I get my kid to be a successful adult? Because right now they're floundering and I don't know what to do next.
They're so lazy. Yeah. Oh, they're... Yeah.
It happens a lot.
I can't motivate them for anything in the world. They just want to... Yeah.
They just love their Xbox. I can't do anything else, you know, whatever it is.
So what is the secret? Come on.
I dare say that there's a series of things we can be doing behind the scenes that will help instill that. Number one, we set the patterns now. As early as you hear this message, set the pattern. If that means your kid's 5 years old and they're going into kindergarten or preschool or whatever, great. And if they're 17, I'd still do it. Start setting the patterns, because patterns and consistency and regularity start to stick, like I was mentioning with rituals and traditions.
So what patterns? What am I doing? Help me.
Setting up patterns of good sleeping, of communicating openly and assertively, saying how you feel. Don't just bottle it up and expect that others are going to read your body language. Be okay to have feelings. Be okay to express emotion. Let that be normal in the household, as a family, one-on-one. Allow experiences to matter more than the calendar sometimes. You know, sometimes we need to just sidestep, bypass the calendar on all of our smartphones and let experience and the moment and a teaching experience matter more. But set patterns right now that place priority in the right places.
It's funny, as you talk about that, I think about times where I feel like my wife and my son and I have bonded the most, and it's sometimes late at night. You know, when the rule would say, no, that hard and fast rule, he needs to be in bed by 10 o'clock, and that's got to be the thing. But for whatever reason, it was a time when he was open, and maybe he recognizes it as, hey, I don't want to go to bed yet and wants to, you know, stay up later, so he's a little bit more open. But it's sometimes those things where I feel like if I would have been like, nope, the hard and fast rule is this thing, I'm governed by this, that those really sweet, tender moments wouldn't have occurred.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's a way to help our kids see the difference, because, you know, they'll use that as another double standard, and they'll say, well, I really need my Xbox right now, and this is really important. And I don't think that's necessarily valid. No. What I think it comes down to is, and I think we should point it out to our kids in the moment of it happening, is that, I think we should set up good schedules. I think that's important to have bedtimes. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to have all those different things in place. Good things. In addition to that, as the moment emerges, if we realize that there's a lesson to be learned, that there's a family moment that matters more, if their feelings suddenly trump the schedule, or if you have a concern or a feeling or a need that trumps the schedule, call it like that. Identify it. Hey, you know what, son, we're keeping you up right now past the bedtime. I know we normally go to bed, but this is because there was something very important we needed to talk about. Mm-hmm. Or it was, I realized today you had a really hard day and I wanted to be there for you. This mattered more to me than the clock. I wanted you to know.
Hmm. And be that deliberate about it.
Absolutely. So that they can distinguish later. Because later, if they say, can I just stay out with my friends until 12 because we're going to go and spray paint something, you know, whatever. then you'll be able to say, no, that's not something we're doing. You have a bedtime. You need to come home. Here's your curfew. It's important. And they say, well, you stayed up the other night with me and you stayed up when we just talked about, you know, friends. And then you can say to them, remember what also I mentioned to you, that there was a reason behind it. There was something very special that made that different than the routine.
Hmm.
Then they can distinguish.
Cool.
So also I would just say, as far as instilling that success, you can pour gasoline on their healthy interests. Whatever their interests are. You know, a lot of times parents, they worry like, I don't want my kid to be too into sports, or I don't want them to be too into this or that, or I want them to be well-rounded. That's fine. Encourage being well-rounded. But if they find fire and passion about something, don't take that away from them.
Sure.
Because later you're going to be craving that. You know, when they're 13, 14, 15, and they're complacent and they're sitting on the couch, nothing interests them, you're going to wish that they were still 8 and they really wanted to go and, you know, collect coins, or they really wanted to, you know, get into the comic books or whatever else. You don't have to be lopsided and not care about anything else. It's good to be well-rounded, but make sure you're also, in addition to keeping them well-rounded, you're pouring gasoline on something that matters to them, because that'll pay off later.
Cool.
I would also say, you know, encourage a healthy self-view. It's important that whenever we can, even if we feel like it's overkill and, it's, you know, they roll their eyes and the kids are like, oh, there goes dad again. There goes mom again saying the same old thing. Even still, make sure that you're reminding them that they're attractive, that they're valuable, that what they have to offer is unique, that they're not a replaceable object in the family or in their school. whatever they are, whatever they have, is an irreplaceable, unique cocktail of memories, experiences, gifts and talents, compassion and love. No one else can duplicate that at the combination that they possess. I need to keep reminding them of that. And that means rewarding their successes. That means acknowledging what they do right. That means pointing out, you know, you look great today. And it's not because, you know, perfect hair or perfect clothes or this or that. It's because they made effort and it paid off and you noticed. That's really valuable stuff. And I think that all of it, you know, kind of fosters a successful outcome because they're going to have, you know, emotional support, a foundational support that's going to carry them when the storms hit. They're going to remember the good things, the rituals, the traditions, the compliments, the success, the rewards they received, the acknowledgement. That's when it's going to matter, and that's when it's going to help them. So those are the good things I would just throw out there.
It's interesting, too, just to side jaunt real quick. It's interesting how I feel like a lot of these things apply to relationships as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to the extent of, like, rituals with my spouse. Like, when I know that Friday night is date night, that's something that I look forward to. The foundation of hearing, oh, yeah, you look great today. You know, being able to weather through difficult things with a spouse. So I think it's interesting how some people may be really good at doing this with their kids, but maybe not their spouse, or with their spouse, but not with their kids. But this is just general, really good information about just relationships.
Yeah. Yeah.
Foundationally.
Yeah, I believe you. I think that's actually really smart because ultimately, if we think about the healthiest of parenting styles, we do have to have a hierarchy. In my view, that's the way that parenting is best done. Mm-hmm. But within the hierarchy, within that structure that we establish, what we're doing is we are fostering and encouraging and modeling healthy relationships, not healthy dominion. So we will be using the same tools that we would turn around and best use with our partners. You know, I don't know if I've mentioned this before or not, but, you know, when it comes to these traditions and rituals, there are 2 days which statistically show up quite frequently as being 2 of the most common days people pass away in nursing homes and hospitals. And they are the day after Christmas and the day after New Year's. And what they believe to be the reason for that is that people, even in terminal illness situations in these care centers, they'll be told by the doctor, you've got 2 months to live back in February. And they'll hold on 10 months to the holiday because they tell themselves, I just got to be here for Christmas. I just got to be here for New Year. This is really important to me. And they delay death. They push back an illness. And if you can do that, if you can delay death because of something that you're looking forward to, that same process in kind of a smaller scale can be applied in our daily and weekly experience. If I know when I come home, my partner's going to be there and receive me warmly. If I know that Friday night I get a date with them. If I know that Saturday morning, rain or shine, we're together. If I know that Sunday, if church is your thing or if it's not, Sunday we have time that's set aside, it's different. Then we can get through all kinds of garbage and drama and problems and stress during the week or the day because there's something that our minds have locked into as being a good thing coming.
Yes.
And it's good. We need to plant that. Do more of it. So,
So now we're to concerns. Is that the next one?
There are concerns as we get back to school.
Here we go. We're going to come back in the third block and we'll talk about concerns. And then the final thing, which is
hard things that sometimes we run into.
All right, so we'll come back in the third block and talk about that.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the third block of the Cultural Hall, and we'll talk about concerns
as we go back to school
and
hard things.
Hard things. This is going to not be nearly as great as the first as the first block. This will be the stuff where we go, oh yeah, that is hard. Oh, these are concerning me. Why can't we go back? We'll listen to the first block or the second block again and get all the good stuff, and now we have to deal with the hard things. All right, so concerns. Let's talk about it.
Well, you know, one of the main things is we need to notice that kids struggle with transitions. This is a normal thing. It doesn't matter who your kid is. Transitions are a hard thing, whether that's transition to a new school, whether it's transition to a new class, maybe it's a new teacher. In elementary school, it can be switching from one year to the next when they've grown so accustomed to a certain teacher or a certain style. As middle school hits, it could be transitioning to that new schedule and lots of different classes and having to change your day all day long. And it can be change of friends, change of venue, change of home. But transitions historically are difficult. And, for some kids who struggle, with emotional problems in the background and depression, anxiety, maybe some autistic spectrum kind of stuff, transitions can become tremendously difficult. But it's not just those folks with an identifiable concern. It's also every kid that goes through life. And transitions require a certain degree of channeling our coping skills and learning to be okay with things that are different. And so what that means is that kids can often tantrum, they'll cry, they'll withdraw socially, they may daydream, they may be regressive in their behaviors, they may act younger than their age. Those things are not a sign of necessarily them floundering and being, a total space cadet or a problem child. What they might indicate is that they're going through something that is transitionally difficult. And as parents, a lot of times new parents aren't even aware of that, and they have to kind of adjust their thinking to be prepared for that. It's usually 2-3 weeks of every school year for the kids to kind of get into the swing of it, to be used to it, to be okay with it, and then to kind of start to set in a routine. So just watch for that, and don't panic if in the first 2 weeks they're really stressing out. Now, when you notice patterns that are not well, they're tantruming, they're daydreaming a lot, or they're totally disconnected or withdrawing, there's things to do with that. But tuck it back in the back of your mind that this may just be normal, natural development stuff.
So be conscious of the time, recognize that it's coming, and then just be aware.
Yeah, and that kind of brings me to the second concern is that I want parents to not be blind. They need to pay attention to things, but it's also important not to pathologize. Because
what do you mean?
Well, so
I hear pathologize and I gloss over and go, "What does he mean?"
Right. So when our children have problems, a natural instinct is a lot of times is to throw a diagnosis on it. Well, that looks like it's depression. Mm-hmm. You have clinical anxiety. You're ADHD. You have this or that. Mm-hmm. Which the truth is, they may have those situations. And I work with those all day long with folks. I mean, I know they're real. No matter what people may say.
No, there's no such thing as ADHD.
Right.
That's just a kid who needs to be challenged.
Right. And that's really the garbage end of the opinion, spectrum. When people, they become so anti-intervention that they say it doesn't exist or it's overdiagnosed. It was overdiagnosed for several years. I'll acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. But it's different now. And I think physicians and therapists are more cautious to throw labels until they see enough criteria to really establish that the concern is there. So if the concerns are there and diagnostically they fall into line because a counselor or a professional, a school counselor, a physician, a qualified person who's got this experience helps you to identify it, then so be it. Treat it and deal with it. That's okay. It's perfectly normal. Mm-hmm. But in the absence of that kind of criteria being established, I believe it's best for us to step away from the label and to work instead with the circumstance. Our child is sad. Let's work with sad. Our child is daydreaming or, just spazzy, lots of energy. Let's work with that. Let's work with energy. You've got lots of energy. That way the kid becomes less of the problem and more of our focus. You know, that our child is our focus. Oh, by the way, they have some certain things they're dealing with. That's a much healthier perspective to take. Hmm. And in that same view, I dare say that the seatbelts of safety should be open communication and staying inquisitive. That's the way that we stay attentive and aware as parents. Remain inquisitive, ask questions, be curious about what your kids are going through, ask them.
Those are the things like, how was school? Good. Well, what do you mean by good? Like taking it that extra step further?
Yeah, and I would even go so far as to say, tell me a good thing that happened today, and were there any bad things that happened today? And let them just kind of go with it. And if they talk to you for 3 seconds... okay, you might want to ask a follow-up. If they talk to you for 5 minutes, let it play. Don't stop them. Never cut them off when they're answering a sincere question that you're being inquisitive about. That's your chance to step back and let them go and just soak it up. That's another way that they're going to feel you're a safe harbor. I also think it's super important that we not compare. I think it's
the hardest. Oh, that kid does this. Oh, those kids are so much more this or so much less this than our kid. Kids.
They're more athletic. They're more able. They can answer questions quickly.
Oh, they're so driven. How come your kid's so driven and mine is not so driven?
And, you know, Elder Bednar said it perfectly. He said in one of his very first talks as an apostle, he said, there's no pancake so thin that it only has one side. And it's true. We need to be very careful about making grand assumptions or comparisons based on what we think is the reality. Most families that have it all together have struggles. Most parents who look perfect have their problems. Most children who perform very well at church or in school, they have their inner demons, their battles that they all have. We all do. It's just a matter of how visible they may be. So if we could try and make it an assignment for ourselves as parents to remove comparison this year, make our assignment to be instead very interested in our child's situation, in our child's growth. And if others are doing well, be pleased, be happy, and recognize that their success will be your child's success, although they may not always be perfectly in tandem.
It's interesting to go, you know, you think of a kid who may be misbehaving or whatever. It's interesting to take that same scope and look at it opposite. Like, okay, my kid is doing blank, blank, and blank, right? Mm-hmm. And this really irritates me. But to try and do a stop thought and go, yeah, but wait a minute. He is really good at, you know, all these positive things. You know, sometimes we'll go positive to negative, but to stop and look, okay, there's these negative things, but what about positive? I think is less human nature, but necessary to do. Okay, this kid is cheating on these things, but he also or she also is, you know, really physically talented or really socially, you know, aware, you know, whatever the things are.
Yeah.
But positive if negative seems to be the things at the forefront.
Yeah, absolutely. And kids will remember that too. If they remember that they're the black sheep, the problem child, the screw up, the person that's always having problems or that's always upsetting mom or dad, that will have a backfire effect that you would not believe. So any chance you can, I would try and stay vigilantly aware of any good things. Just like you're saying, so that when it comes time to discipline or correct or redirect or teach them something, that it's already been counterbalanced in advance with good. That's a really smart thing to do.
Cool.
There's a lot of good websites too. I would just throw out there, you know, feel free to get some advice for questions to ask to get the door open for communication to start. And, you know, Love and Logic isn't a bad route to go. It's not the only route. It's one of several good ones, and you can kind of adapt it as you go. But if you're one of those parents that's just struggling and floundering and you're thinking, oh, I don't even know how to start this stuff, you don't have to stay in that stuck position and forever just kind of assume that everything's impossible. You can either go to a counselor and they can kind of guide you through on your specific circumstance and give you some hands-on tools for your life and your family, or you could go to some websites. I personally would recommend sticking with websites that have a big stake in the game. Go to websites that either have government connections like .govs, or I would go to websites that have printed magazines attached to them or that have a tremendous following, because the likelihood of them checking their sources and giving careful and research-backed evidence and that kind of suggestion is going to be much more likely than maybe some website or blog that throws out their ideas,
well,
but they don't have anything.
Well, here's my experience about what you're saying.
And people sometimes get really derailed by that because they say, oh, no, I sat on this blog. I read it. Well, that's nice, but that doesn't actually mean that there's any research behind it.
Yeah.
You know, make sure that you're basing your good ideas and you're stretching out of your comfort zone stuff on things that have research behind it, that have standing.
You mentioned Love and Logic. Mention a couple others that people might be able to go to.
Like another one out there is parents.com is another one. And there's several more. Of course, I'm blanking on them all right now. But what I would do is
I'd blurt them out
as they come.
Parents empowered.
You know, it's ironic, but you go to some of these websites like babycenter.com, and they actually give you good parenting advice for little kids up through their younger years. Mm-hmm. And then they have links. That's a reputable website. And then they have links that connect you to follow-up topics and things.
Cool.
So anyway, those are good things to be aware of. You don't have to have all the answers. I think that's really important. Parents do not have to be perfect. You don't have to know everything. You just have to be humble enough and willing enough to change the game and to kind of change your approach.
Sure.
Occasionally, and then you'll be fine.
Are we still on concerns?
And just a couple. I just throw this out is don't be. it's so common. We often will.
It's 2 o'clock.
We often will focus on the things that sidestep our kids' feelings. You know, for example, these phrases, you may have heard these pop up before. Like they'll say like, well, you just have a little depression, honey, mm-hmm. or you're just a little over anxious, or you're too stressed out. Don't be so OCD. Or they'll say things like, you just have a chemical imbalance, or you know what, your hormones are raging. Mm-hmm. This is just a phase you're going through. Mm-hmm. If we could, in one big bundle, put all of those special phrases in a box and never use them again, that would be an amazing. That'd be so good. Because the problem is our children, our teens and young kids, need to feel like their experience mattered.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to label them. That doesn't help. Even if they genuinely have depression, the conversation shouldn't be, well, honey, you've just got depression. That doesn't help.
Right.
If they're sad
about
something.
Right, what do I do with that?
Right. The kid's supposed to think, oh, great, I've got depression. Thanks, Mom. So if they have depression or anxiety, then work with them on it. But the thing to address in the moment of the conversation isn't, honey, this is anxiety talking. The thing to say is, you sound really worried. You sound really stressed out. You look sad. You look like you're really struggling. I want to help you out. Help me understand what's going on. I want to know more about that. We talked before, I think you and I, Richie, about how there's surface feelings and then there's core feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And surface feelings are what we show the world. You know, they're really obvious, like the irritable, mad, rage, frustrated, jealous, resentful, lashing out, throwing up walls, being guarded and defensive, that kind of stuff, versus the core feelings, which are like pain and fear, hurt and rejection, abandonment, loneliness, feeling inadequate, guilt and shame, you know, and also love and peace and trust and joy. But what will be true every time is if they've got a surface emotion, if they're irritable, mm-hmm. if they're resentful, if they're guarded and throwing up walls, if they're super sarcastic all the time and trying to be walled off, or if they're just cranky, it happens, or jealous, frankly. If they have those things, that happens every time because there's a core emotion that triggered the ball. They may not realize that trigger ball was there, but it's there. And so it kind of falls to us an opportunity to help them realize it. You know, you can say very gently, you need to be very careful, ask your kids how they feel. Ask them all kinds of kind of interested questions. Turn off your electronics. Don't do it with your cell phone in your hand and the TV going. Take them aside. Go for a walk. Go get them some ice cream or whatever. Tune into them. Make sure they know that they're important. And they'll fight it at first. A lot of kids will just kind of roll their eyes, or they'll zone out, or they'll try and put their earbuds in or whatever mm-hmm. else. Don't be derailed by their disinterest. Hmm. That's a natural shell that they're going to put up to keep themselves safe. If they do, you know, put up the, oh, here we go again, or the, I don't want to talk to you, or nothing you're going to say is going to matter, or you don't have any idea what it's like for me, or they put their earbuds in or whatever, you just need to assume, my kid's struggling so much that they had to have a shell up. They had to have a mask.
Okay.
That's what that means. So sidestep it, kind of just be persistent for a minute. You don't have to get in their face and force them to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But remind them, be persistent enough that they realize that they matter more than the discomfort of asking the question.
Hmm.
So say something like, you know, if they won't talk and you're just kind of running against dead ends over and over again, then you might say something like this. You know, you seem like you're having a really rough day. I mean, you really do. All I can think is that earlier on, and then plug in any core emotion that I listed before.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance that today earlier on you just felt disrespected? I mean, did someone like totally disregard you? Maybe you felt like super stressed out. Are you just overwhelmed? And don't make it sound like they're weird for having that. Make it sound like maybe this is the answer to the puzzle.
Hmm.
I was just wondering, maybe could this possibly be, are you just super stressed out? I mean, find me a teenager that wouldn't want you to say, in a completely non-blaming stance, that maybe they're too overwhelmed or that maybe they've been mistreated in some way.
Yeah.
That's what they want to hear because that's how they usually feel. So if we volunteer that proposition, like maybe that's what's going on. Is there any chance of that? It gives them the chance to say, Yeah, fine. Yeah, some of that did happen. Well, whatever. Or, yeah, there's this thing. Or maybe they'll bust into tears. Or maybe they'll say nothing. They might say nothing to you. But you still opened the door and you still planted a seed in them mm-hmm. that they saw that you cared more about them and their feelings than putting a label on it and making it go away.
Yeah.
Don't make it go away. And if they don't want to talk, they don't want to talk. That's okay. Respect that. Be persistent once or twice and then respect it mm-hmm. and then let it be and then let it come back, you know, and then in a half hour or an hour later or the next day, if something else shows up. But, we need to be constantly ready to not, there's my word again, pathologize or label their experience with some quick fix answer. Well, you're just going through a phase. That'll happen. You know, when you're young, this is what, that is not helpful. Mm-hmm. It doesn't serve anyone. Because all it's doing basically is making it easy for you to put it in a box so you don't have to think about it anymore. Well, my son is going through depression. Check.
Yep.
There's the box. Or they'll say, well, my son's just very hormonal right now. Check. And you did nothing. You helped no one. Whereas I say something to my son, I say something like this. You know, son, I get it. You wanted to stay out last night. That was a big deal for you. And we broke a rule. We had to deal with that. I also wondered, though, if maybe you felt a lot of pressure. Maybe it was really like hard for you to think it through. Was that possibly what happened? I don't know. I was just curious. Mm-hmm. Come from a position of curiosity. Let them confirm it or redirect you. Anyway, those things
are
important.
I don't like concerns. And now we're getting to hard things. That doesn't sound any better.
Maybe we should have gone in reverse order.
That's what I'm thinking. Now there's hard things coming.
Well, you know, the truth is we're not all going to have to deal with these hard things 24/7, not even every year, you know, although we need to be aware of them being real enough that we might have to address them. One is that, you know, bullying may happen and it could be that our kid is the bully or being bullied. Let me rephrase that to be fair. I don't think it's actually healthy to say this is the bully or this is the victim mm-hmm. because we're kind of assigning a role to the kid. And in kids' minds, it's very hard for them to believe that that's changeable. So it kind of becomes permanent. So rather than saying, you know, you're being a bully, I would say you're being unkind mm-hmm. or you might go so far as to say this behavior seems bullying, but I wouldn't label them as the bully or the victim. Mm-hmm. Instead, say you've been mistreated today. Things didn't go well. You weren't being treated fairly. And I want to address that. I want to work on that with you, or you need to be kinder to people around you. This isn't working, you know, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But bullying may come up and there's a lot of things that can help with this stuff. You know, I personally would recommend, stopbullying.gov. Okay. That's the correct website. And it's really good. It's chock full of some good ideas for both parents, for teachers, for the kid, frankly. And it talks about how to address those kids who are engaging in bullying behaviors. And it talks about how to stop it, how to recognize it, what to do next. It's good stuff. But bullying is a reality, and it's happening more and more and more, especially with the electronic stuff that we have at our fingertips. There's a lot of
that's probably a whole different episode itself.
We probably bullying, should talk about the right? one, that, yeah. But it comes up in different ways, and there's some psychology behind why bullying happens. We can talk about that another day.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's have a future episode where let's we just talk all about bullying.
Fair enough. Okay? Fair enough. Another hard thing just to keep your eye out for that it may come up is there may be the need during the school year for your kid to get some counseling. Don't be afraid of that. It's, you know, the stigma that we have in these Western states of independent and I will be fine and I'm strong enough and I'm self-reliant. I even think it kind of bleeds to the church. You know, we have that perspective of I need to be so strong and so independent that I don't rely on others and I'm prepared and my food storage is ready and mm-hmm. I don't need a soul. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But emotionally, all of us are working toward a goal of being interdependent. Meaning that we become as strong as we possibly can and we recognize places where we can connect our hearts and glean from the strength of others. That is healthy. Interdependence. And so what would be smart for all of us is to recognize that if our children is struggling with anxiety or depression, or they need to kind of repair from some bullying, or maybe they need some redirection on defiance or laziness or motivation, that's okay. Those things happen. It's cyclical. It happens with kids. Our parenting position isn't seasonal. It's not cyclical. It's supposed to be there all the time, mm-hmm. but struggles will be. And so if they come up, be okay with the idea of letting someone step in and intervene and help out and give you some suggestions. kids will often talk to a counselor about things that they don't know how to tell their parents. Not because they think that they have to use a different language, but because they're terrified that their parent won't understand or won't let their feelings count. That they'll just turn around and parent and instruct them instead of empathizing. So sometimes to kind of change that culture in our child's mind, we have to let a counselor or a trusted friend step in and be their kind of mediator, go-to person, reinstill some faith in the child's mind that the parent cares, and then encourage the child to come back and talk to the parent and let the parent suddenly empathize and gush that empathy that the child needed all along. Anyway.
More hard things. Oh.
Parents often get anxiety too, and
sure.
I think it's super important that parents...
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. You know,
over some of the smallest things I notice myself, and I don't consider myself to be a worried person at all, but sometimes I'm just like, oh my gosh, and the anxiety, it makes me into a person that is not me, quite honestly.
Yeah. There are more people that struggle with that than not. It's really common. Anxiety will come over you. Sadness will come over you. Depression from a very real place. And when those things happen, as a parent, it can be so good for our families, for our marriages, for us to step up, to acknowledge it and say, this is something I'm going through. I'd like to get some help for this. I'd like for this not to be so hard for me. And if we can do that very difficult, very brave thing, we'll start getting help. Our marriages will feel more peaceful because our partner will know how to help us and reach us and comfort us and understand us. And our children will see through a very real modeling example, mom and dad, they also struggle and they know how to get help. Mm-hmm. I can get help too if I need it. That's huge. And allowing emotion to be part of your experience. Don't hide it. Don't bottle it up. Kids falls down, skins his knee on the soccer field. We tell him to, you know, brush it off and get up and keep going. You're fine. And then we praise him when they do. It's okay to also have times where the kid falls down and we say, that was hard, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I get that. That would make me hurt too. And then just one last thing.
No, one more hard thing. Oh, too many hard things.
I'm sensing the stress this is causing you, Richard. So, I would just say, you know, there's a growing influence of pornography that's coming into our kids. And it's starting as early as kindergarten with electronics.
Really?
Because kids are going to school with their cell phones. And in kindergarten, they'll go out to play for a few minutes sometimes out on the playground, and they'll be showing each other stuff. They don't even know what it means yet.
Right.
And they'll be showing each other stuff. And, you know, whether that's their older siblings showing it to them or someone abused them or they just tripped upon it because, for heaven's sake, they're on the internet because that's
just
what
just,
happens.
I mean, they're just curious. I remember as a kid, and what kid didn't look up penis in the dictionary? You know what I'm saying? And you'd be like, you know, and you don't really know what it is. I mean, you kind of do. Or just like different things, words that you'd heard other people use.
Yeah.
Kids are curious. They want to know what it is.
Yeah.
Tell me that you did that so I don't feel
That's
so weird.
That's totally normal.
Okay,
that's totally normal.
But yeah. I mean, that is where that curiosity, that growing and learning that we want, but we don't necessarily want it in those type of things.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I would say is it's very important that as our children go to school, we may consider, even as early as kindergarten or first grade, having an age-appropriate variation on the talk.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to get into the nitty-gritties that we will probably at 10 or 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
But in an age-appropriate way, we may introduce the idea that, hey, you know what? Sometimes people take pictures of their whole bodies. And sometimes that makes us feel shocked and awkward and uncomfortable. Sometimes it's curious and exciting. It's kind of different. But just wanted you to know that those pictures sometimes are out there. And this is what's appropriate and this is what's not appropriate. And we want to have this kind of picture, you know, in our computers and at home and in our minds. This is what's good. And we'll tell you more about it if you're curious, that kind of a thing. Always leave the door open. Then we're happy to talk to you more about it if you're curious. Always. Never make it strange for the kid to ask you questions. Sex in my house growing up was as normal as pass the potatoes.
Really?
Yeah. Just at dinner time, we talk about everything. And that's okay. It's totally fine. You know, if kids want to talk about anything, let that be normal. Let it be okay. But I think it's also very wise to answer the questions so far as they ask. Because sometimes kids will ask like an intro question about like, well, John had this picture of this girl and he showed me and, you know, she wasn't dressed and, you know, this was happening. And then we'll like figure, okay, here we go. And we launch into like the whole tamale. And then the kid at the end will be like,
I was just asking about the picture.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I would do is I would ask them, what do you want to know about that? Tell me what you're curious about. I'm happy to talk to you about anything. Tell me what you'd like to know. And the kids already recognize you as the authority on sex because they know that you know about it and they don't. So don't be like a standoffish authority. Be an authority on the subject that wants to talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's totally great. It's awesome. This is the place to talk about it. I know for some parents that's super awkward and uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to do that. But embrace the awkward and just challenge yourself to be ready to go there. And when it comes to pornography with teens, go there first. When it's a teenager at play, 12, 13, 14, I would introduce the topic to them. And I would say things like, and this is important too, a good friend of mine, Mark Chamberlain, who works at Suncrest Counseling, he's talked about this, and I really respect what he's mentioned about this topic. He said before that when a child experiences that curiosity or the interest or the, you know, the rush of the feeling or, you know, they're just excited by the image or whatever, we need to be sure not to pathologize, or again, there's that word. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure not to make them feel like that's a problem, that they felt it, you know. You're supposed to have a reaction to these pictures.
Yeah, God created you, literally created you to go, look at that and go, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, there's an urge involved. Sometimes there's a shock involved. Sometimes it's a scared involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, those feelings, whatever it may be, are normal. Mm-hmm. Let that be normal. Make sure your kid knows it's normal to feel. Then what to do next with the feeling is the thing where the parenting comes into play. Mm-hmm. You felt excited by that. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. It's because there's some very special things that are going to go on with that. I want to talk to you about that for a minute. If they feel really scared about it, say, well, I'm not surprised. Those things are kind of not appropriate for your age group. And mm-hmm. the people around you that are getting into that, I'd probably want to distance myself a little bit because I don't want to get surrounded by that stuff. It's not a good feeling to have that out of context. Mm-hmm. Anyway, those kinds of things. I guess I just wanted to leave you with this thought that it's really important that we not shy away from the hard conversations. As parents, we are the best people to have the conversations with our kids. If we don't have them or we don't have the willingness to have them, someone else will, mm-hmm. electronically or in person. And then we get into all kinds of problems trying to backpedal and correct the problem. But if you don't know how to do that, again, really good thing. There's some great counselors out there. They can kind of talk you through this, walk you through it. Get online, find some ideas, some approaches. But remember this, you don't have to have a script in advance. Mark Chamberlain talks about this too. You don't have to have the perfect script, the perfect words mm-hmm. to get the conversation going. Just launch in. And that's right. That's the way to go.
If people want to get in touch with you, Kirk, how can they do so?
So you can go online, ambercreekcounseling.com, or our phone number is 801-455-0045. You can shoot us an email through the website. We'd be happy to come to your events, chat with you on location, or you can come and have counseling there. Or we also do classes at times in Park City and sometimes down here in Sandy where our office is located. And we're happy to help any way we can.
We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.